with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, hello, hello, everybody. Good afternoon, one and all, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com. /reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Okay, very nice to be with you here today. I just wanted to say that just in case you want to go back and listen again to this broadcast, or if you want to go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, these you can do so because these broadcasts are podcasted, so you're able to do that. And I'd also want to just take a moment at the beginning of this particular show to thank you for all the support over the past year, and would like to say that you now have an opportunity to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber. Now, a subscription is not required to listen to or access my talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So again, just to invite you to go to the website and click on the link and choose any amount that you feel comfortable giving. And again, I deeply, deeply appreciate it. Well, I am very excited to be with you here today and every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between. Because each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show, the number is 888-627-6008. That is 888-627-6008. And I will be taking any calls after the break. Wow. Here we are. We are coming down the wire at the end of July, and I don't know about you, but summer is quickly moving on, even though we have a whole another month of August, and depending on where you live, September can be also a very warm month as well. But it's interesting this past week that I've just been talking to kids who are out on vacation, and you don't want to mention back-to-school shopping because that throws them into a little tizzy, and they're just not quite ready for that. So I know that's coming soon enough, and they know it's coming soon enough. Let's not force it. Let's let them enjoy summer as much as possible, okay? So if this is your first time tuning in, just welcome to the show. I just thank you. And again, just leave me your comments, you know, on the website. I always appreciate reading them. And just in case you're wondering what reclaiming authenticity is all about, it is, you know, this integration of our spirituality and our mental health, but it's placed all within the context of our relationships with ourselves and with others and with God or the divine or the universe. Okay, and again, for those of you new to the program, I just like to say that I am a firm believer that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need in this life in terms of our gifts, our skills, our talents, our strengths, character traits, personality, so on and so forth, all the very best parts of who we are. However, sometimes as we go along in life and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may feel like we need to hide the very best parts of ourselves. We feel that we need to just not show our giftedness or our skills or our talents to others, or we push that giftedness way down so others cannot see it, because perhaps there was a time in our life in which we were really, you know, glad to show others just the uniqueness of who we are. And for one reason or another, it was exploited by people who were jealous, or they did not understand, or for whatever reason they did. Or perhaps we were told that we would never amount to anything, and that we have yet to even discover our gifts and our talents and our skills and strengths and personalities and so forth. But at any rate, you know, we just don't realize that there is so much more to us. In fact, we have yet to discover the very best parts of ourselves, because when we do discover the best parts of ourselves, there's always more to us to discover. So at any rate, when we don't realize that giftedness, we often go through life functioning from a place of woundedness or victimhood, instead of a place of healing or wholeness and embracing our hachetas, or uniqueness. And this is why I place this integration of spirituality and mental health in the context of relationships. Because when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in relationships. And yet, the irony is, we can also discover our greatest healing and strength and peace and forgiveness and love through healthier relationships. So all in all, it always brings us back to relationships. And these relationships just might be within our own families. It could be our coworkers, colleagues, or friends. But you know, when we transform, we also transform others by our presence, by our grace, even our understanding. You know, it may not show up right away, but on some level in others, a transformation is occurring because we are treating them differently. But let us keep in mind also that when it comes to forgiveness and kindness and compassion, these things have to begin with how we treat ourselves. Because when we treat ourselves more compassionately, we can then be more compassionate with others. And when we are forgiving and more forgiving with ourselves, then I found that we can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves and be grateful for everything in our lives, we then can discover how this opens up our hearts to live and see in gratitude with others. Transformation, first and foremost, begins with us, but it will be the catalyst that allows us to transcend and to tap into not just the best parts of ourselves, but we can find tremendous, tremendous depth in love and gratitude and peace in our relationships. Well, how is your heart today? I hope you are well. I hope your heart as well. And I pray that if you're struggling today, you'll find rest in the comfort and the peace that you need. Well, welcome to today's show. It's a show that's going to be focusing on the alchemy of milk, butter, and cheese. You heard right, milk, butter, and cheese. And now, this may seem like a strange topic to discuss, but when you think about it, you know, every time you go to the grocery store, most people have on their grocery list, you know, I have to buy milk, butter, and cheese. And of course, there are other products such as yogurt, cottage cheese, and so forth. But I don't know if you've ever done this before, but I'm going to give you a little experiment. And it's not just an experiment, but it's one of these life-changing realizations that whenever you get home and you pour yourself a glass of milk, okay, I want you just to let it sit for a while and just take a look at that. And what do you see? Okay, I'm not talking about, well, I see whole milk, I see skim milk, I see 2%. It's not that. But just take a closer look at the glass of milk. Okay? And when you're looking at that glass of milk, ask yourself this question. Am I able to see the butter and the cheese that is already in it? Okay, and this is a great analogy for how we are able to see God and the potential that we can see in ourselves and others in everyday life. Just a powerful, powerful metaphor, this glass of milk. And what do we see? More than just milk, but can we see the butter and cheese in it? Well, a few years ago, I was told a particular story about butter and milk. It was told the very first time I visited India, and I was visiting a Sikh spiritual leader, Baba Ram Singh, in Karnal, India, and he shared with me this story about the most important place to look for God. And here's how the story goes. He said, "There once lived a king who was quite rich. He was a very, very wealthy king. And this king used to pray a lot. Every day he used to pray in the morning. He prayed at meal times, and he even prayed at night. But one day a thought came into his mind, and he said, 'You know, I pray to God. I always think about God. But where is God? Where does God live?' So the next day he sends out a message to all the people that, if anybody can tell me where God is, I will give him or her 100 gold coins. Well, the news got out that the rich king was going to offer 100 gold coins to anybody who could tell him where God is. And everybody wanted to try and tell him. And just tons of people just showed up. And some would say, "Oh, I can tell you where God is. God's in the mountains." Some would say, "Oh, no, 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 God's not in the mountains. God's in the sky." Well, no, God's not in the sky. God is in the heavens, or God is in the sea, or God is in faraway countries. But this wasn't quite the answer the king was looking for. Well, a few days later, a man came to see the king, and he was a very wise man. Everybody knew him as just a quiet, very calming and humble person. He said, "Sir, I know where God is." Well, the wealthy king asked, "Really? Well, please tell me, where is God?" And the wise man said, "Okay, I just need you to bring me a bowl of milk first." And the wealthy king didn't understand how that would help, but it seemed easy enough. And so after the milk arrived, the wise man said, "Now, dear king, I want you to put your hand in the bowl of milk." So the king put his hand in the milk. And then the wise man asked him, "What's in that milk, sir?" And the king replied, "There's nothing in the milk. It's just a bowl of milk." And so this wise man asked him again, "Are you quite sure there is just milk in there?" "Well, no," said the rich king, "there's nothing in the milk. It's just a bowl of milk." So the wise man said, "Okay, I want you to stir the milk with your hand." So the king stirred the milk, and he stirred it, and he stirred it, and he stirred it. He stirred it for such a long time that he had to take a break. And after he rested, he started to stir it again. And he stirred it and stirred it and stirred it. And in time, from the same bowl of milk, there was cream. And then there was butter. And these things came from the milk. Well, the rich man looked at the wise man and said, I don't understand. What's the point are you trying to make? I asked you to tell me where God is, and you just got a bowl of milk and made me stir it. Okay, I see the cream came out, and then it turned into butter. But where is God?" The wise man said, "Sir, God isn't necessarily far away. God can be found inside you." And what we have to do sometimes is to churn ourselves, our mind, our heart, our feelings, our soul. We've just got to call on God's name And that calling or that chanting of God's name is like the churning. It's like the churning of the milk. And slowly, within time, we will see that God is inside of us. Just like the butter is inside the milk, God is inside of us. And after hearing this, the rich king fell to his knees and he bowed to the wise man. And when I heard this story from this Sikh spiritual leader, you know, little did I realize just how important it is to understand that the presence of God or the divine can be seen in everyone, and especially ourselves, in everyday life. I mean, on the surface, yeah, we might find this teaching difficult because, let's say, we look at ourselves, or when we look at others, all we see is, you know, so much physical pain or emotional wounds or psychological suffering or expressions of anger and violence or lust or jealousy and brokenness. But can we also see the potential for God's presence to transform these wounds into a life-giving means of creating the healing we truly want to see in this world? In other words, can we see the potential for the milk to be transformed into butter? Let alone, how can we transform dimensions into higher spiritual awareness? You know, let's ask ourselves these questions. Do we see potential in ourselves? Do we see ourselves as more than just the body? Do we see ourselves as souls, which are limitless and vast? And yet, how many times do we struggle with seeing God in this world because we're unwilling or we're unable to shift our focus? Or, you know, let's be honest, you know, perhaps we're too busy to quiet ourselves and listen for God's still small voice. Or, let's take this one step further. How many times do we wrongly assume that in order to see God, we must first make God conform to our vision, and we have to make God conform to our philosophy and our worldview and our prayers? You know, that if God wants a relationship with me, then it's going to have to be on my terms. And this is simply not the case. Because you see, God is not akin to the genie in Aladdin's lamp. And we don't obtain these things simply by rubbing the spiritual lamp, hoping to get three wishes. So how do we see God more clearly, and how do we grow in this loving relationship more dearly, and how do we follow God, you know, closer each day? Well, let me propose this idea. Perhaps right before we ask this question of how, maybe a better question would be for us to first understand from where inside our soul do these desires come. Okay, perhaps the desire to see and love and follow God actually comes from a deep place in us that words cannot express. Because, you know, as we heal from our psychological and emotional and physical and spiritual wounds, we will begin to look at ourselves and others differently. And this is a very good beginning. It may not make sense, but it is a very good beginning. However, when we're able to see what we're truly made of, that is, of light and soul, we begin to understand the true meaning of seeing the butter and the cheese in the bowl of milk. It may not be there at first glance, but as we develop our relationship with God or the divine, we heal from our woundedness. And here's the irony in all this. When we are truly able to see ourselves as souls, and ultimately, when we're able to realize ourselves as souls, and we begin to see others as souls, we're going to get to a place where we're no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. Okay? How many times do we often hear, like on a daily basis, and we hear and we see people calling for an end to violence and crime and poverty? And it's interesting, humanity, just looking at the history of humanity, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has never looked for the answers in the right places. Because all too often, the focus has been on the externals that have often caused such division in humanity since the beginning of measured time. And it is the externals that have produced these isms in the world today. I mean, we have sexism, we have racism, we have ageism, we have classism, we have egoism, and so on and so on. But when we focus on the soul of the person, all of these isms fall away. They simply cannot follow the language of the soul because the soul is always found by looking inward. And we're able to see the soul, we realize there's no more sexism, there's no more racism, there's no more ageism, there's no more egoisms, because isms do not have a voice in the matters of the soul. Now, on a lighthearted note here, maybe you remember that famous line in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where Ferris is talking to the camera while in the shower, and he says, "Not that I condone fascism, or any ism for that matter. Isms, in my opinion, are not good. A person should not believe in an ism. He should believe in himself." And I quote John Lennon, "I don't believe in Beatles. I just believe in me." Good point. After all, he was the walrus. I could be the walrus, but I'd still have to bum rides off people. Well, in all seriousness, folks, you know, there are no more isms of this nature simply because they cannot hold up to the standard that we are all souls and we are all children of light. We're all children of God. And when a belief becomes an ism, it generally becomes, you know, taken in as a part of one's identity. And the shift is from merely having a conviction to being a conviction. You know, it's just as people say, well, it sounds true, so it just has to be me. And, you know, what are you going to do? And it just doesn't make sense. But, well, you know, I'm of a certain age, so there's ageism that's going on, or I'm of a certain race, and there's racism going on, or there's sexism or egoism. And that's just the way it is. And that is so unfortunate, because I guarantee when we can see each other as souls and we start to treat each other as souls, isms will never, ever enter into our language again. They just simply cannot. Well, back in the early 90s, there was a shift in the field of psychology. And prior to this, there was this focus in the field that was solely on diagnosis, you know, and identifying what's wrong with people in order to then give them a diagnosis and then develop treatment plans to help them heal and improve and so forth. But since the early 90s, positive psychology has come along and really turned the field of psychology on its head, because it encouraged people and mental health professionals to not focus on what is wrong with them, but instead they are encouraged to identify, you know, with what positive gifts and graces and skills and character traits do they already possess. And in this way, people are empowered toward a more solution-focused approach to their problems. And another tool I use to help people discover their character strengths comes straight from Peterson and Seligman back in 2004, who have identified 24 categories. Character traits, positive character traits that everybody has. You know, these categories could be appreciation of beauty, or say bravery, or creativity, or a curiosity with life, fairness, forgiveness, gratitude, authenticity, and so forth. And as people explore these positive character traits, they're often empowered, perhaps for the very first time in their lives, to actually name what gives their lives meaning and purpose. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I will be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I just want to share with you a little bit about next week's show. That show is going to be entitled The Alchemy of Transforming the Dimensional Energy of Intergenerational Trauma. Let me say that again. The Alchemy of Transforming the Dimensional Energy of Intergenerational Trauma. And it seems like everybody is familiar with that African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. Okay. And this proverb is often used to remind everyone that we are all factors when it comes to raising children. Whether or not you're a parent or a grandparent or a sister or a brother, an aunt or an uncle. And, you know, this is the reason why we take on the, you know, this factor, we take on this responsibility, because children are always watching, always listening, always learning. And children do need to be taught the meaning and purpose of values and roles and, say, love and forgiveness and morality and the importance of relationships. But if we're honest with ourselves, we realize that not all the lessons children learn are healthy and life-giving. And unfortunately, sometimes the lessons children learn are from the wounds of others who have suffered tremendously, but who have never had a chance to heal. And what often cements these painful lessons is the relentless oppression and reinforced norms from society that intends to reinforce that message that people are insignificant and need to be kept in their place. So we're going to take a look at that and how we can be the alchemy to transform these dimensional energies throughout intergenerational trauma. So I invite you to tune in next Friday at noon Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about, when we are truly able to see ourselves as souls and ultimately when we are able to realize ourselves as souls and we begin to see others as souls, that we are no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. But there seems to be this push-pull energy going on that wants people to focus on just the externals instead of looking at each other and looking within each other as souls. And I talked about back in the early 90s, there was a shift in the field of psychology, you know, that went from, well, let's focus on the diagnosis and identify what's wrong with people in order to diagnose them and develop treatment plans and help them heal and improve and so forth. But it was in the early 90s that positive psychology really started to gain some traction and encouraged mental health professionals to focus not on what's wrong with people, but let's go and find what's right with people. Let's go and help them discover the very best parts of themselves. Let's go and help them, encourage them to identify with what positive gifts and graces and skills and character traits do they already possess. And of course, you know, if you remember what I said at the beginning of the show, very much I love positive psychology because I'm a firm believer. That's like I said, we all come into the world with these gifts and graces already, but let's go and find them, okay? Because they belong to us. And, you know, they identified 24 positive character traits, and everybody has them, but nobody can live out these traits quite like you and I can. You know, and this is where our personalities come in. We live out these traits of courage and curiosity and spirituality and forgiveness and and so forth. But we put our, shall we say, fingerprints all over it. Okay. And we share those things from the realization that these are very much life transformative gifts that we have, but they're not just for us. You know, we might be the stewards of them. We might be entrusted with them, but these gifts are meant to be shared because they are meant for others. So whatever we do, let us do and say and affirm others so that the people may live. And yet, this awareness of our gifts, you know, is in the very best parts of ourselves is only the beginning. That if we truly recognize, you know, the positive character traits in us, chances are our ancestors may have possessed them too. Okay, because remember, trauma is not the only thing that may have been passed down to us. We have also received, let's say, these positive character strengths or strong work ethics and resiliency, just to name a few. Now, either way, to truly live our lives to our greatest potential is also to realize who we are as souls, as well as, you know, that our gifts and graces are meant for the benefit of others. You know, there are many people out there who may never realize who they are as souls, let alone being, you know, they're just at times unable to embrace such strengths in themselves. And perhaps they were never allowed to realize these potentials, never encouraged, or maybe they hid these strengths out of fear or rejection or shame. But regardless, positive character traits, you know, is for all of us. We just have to find them and we reclaim them. They belong to us, but to be shared for all. And another Sikh version would say that we are all droplets of water returning to the ocean, and we are no different from one another, albeit the externals. So why do we have the externals when, and why are we on Earth as an embodied soul? And some would say that we are an embodied soul because the karma of our soul still needs to work out in terms of the lessons that are learned, as well as the healing that needs to take place. And many times, you know, we believe that God can be captured, you know, and summed up in just looking at the externals. That if we just polish up the outside, then God can be found in the aesthetics of people, places, and things. Okay? Nothing wrong with that. God can be found in the most incredible places, people, and things. But the danger of this farsightedness is that when we are so focused on the external, there's a tendency there to overlook the soul of another person, let alone the butter and the cheese inside every bowl of milk. Because, as I mentioned earlier, it all comes back to relationships. And this kind of alchemy is needed in the world today, you know, especially in the up-and-coming generations. And again, I'm convinced the older I get, the greatest lessons we can teach those generations who are coming after us is for them to see us behaving graciously, compassionately, and more loving towards each other. And more importantly, we who are the older generations need to make sure that the younger generations know how to see and to hear and embrace their own potential for kindness and strength, resiliency and hope. I mean, they need to know that we see them as good husbands and wives. They need to know that we see them as good fathers and mothers. We need to make sure they know how valuable and hopeful they are. This is alchemy, a spirit, a changing of energy into something more life-giving that we find in ourselves. And I often tell, when I was teaching, I often told my students, and I tell others, to never underestimate the power of a person's presence in any given situation. And this is what it means for us to be in the world that is constantly generating anger and rage and contempt and strife and violence, uncertainty and confusion. Healing is a deeply human process. And because it's a deep process, self-care is most important. And whenever I'm involved in clearing negative energy, either from land or helping others process their emotions, I have to take it easy with myself. And depending on the intensity of the energy, I usually have to sleep for a while afterwards in order for myself to continue processing out the shift in energy. And let me share with you just a little example of what I mean by this. Several years ago, I was able to travel to the Mohawk Institute in Brantford, Ontario. And this is a place I felt called to pray for the souls of the children whose remains were discovered on the grounds. And I won't go into all the history of the Mohawk Institute, but this was clearly one that was often used as a model for indigenous children to be re-educated. And a lot of horrific, horrific tragedies were recorded and discovered years and years and years later. And just a lot of misery and pain. And you talk about intergenerational trauma. There are some, perhaps even to this day, who had gone to that institute or have had grandparents or great-grandparents who were forced to go to that Mohawk Institute in Ontario. And they just, the things that they've endured, what they've experienced, what they've seen, and so forth, has just stayed with them. And it's unfortunate, but grandchildren and great-grandchildren are now the ones who feel as though they're reliving some of those traumatic experiences, even though they weren't there. Well, weeks prior to this visit, I researched the history of this institute, and I discovered various stories of children whose deaths were never accounted for by the church or the government. In fact, outsiders had unearthed sections of the grounds believed to be part of the mass graves. And they found articles of children's clothing and porcelain buttons of school uniforms that were worn back in the day, and ribbons and even pieces of children's bones. And these physical evidences only reinforced the stories from the adult survivors of the Mohawk Institute about the mistreatment, the exploitation, the physical, emotional, and sexual abuses that the children suffered. Now, prior to my trip to Brantford, my dreams consisted of hearing the souls of these children laughing and crying. And once I arrived at the Mohawk Institute, their songs became stronger, and I felt deeply within my soul this kind of anticipation that just started to tremble. And I sat on the grounds behind the abandoned main building for some time just to, you know, get comfortable with the energy, just to feel the energy. And the air was indeed, I remember, a mixture of sorrowfulness and relief. And I had made some prayer ties from tobacco and sage that I had hung at the edge of the woods about 50 yards from the school. And I had my Native American drum with me, and I began to walk around the grounds and just softly drumming and asking for God's assistance and, you know, from the universe to surround me with love and grace. And I asked to speak to the souls of the children who remained tied to the land, because of the traumatic energy that was holding them there, and that it was time for them to go be with God. And I remember hearing their sorrow and sobs quickly turned into sounds of laughter, just like I had heard in my dreams weeks before. But I continued to walk these grounds, and I drummed, and telling these souls that they were not forgotten, and that God knows every one of them by name. I told them that God has heard their cries, and the trauma that they suffered at this place is now being healed, that they are no longer tied to this land because of the negative energy of trauma, and that has been broken. And I started to see the children's souls come up out of the woods, dressed in their school uniforms. The girls had ribbons in their hair, and the boys were wearing white shirts. Sometimes they would come up out of the woods individually, or sometimes two by two. And once they reached the edge of these woods, they looked up and then were immediately transported to heaven, you know, just with a gentle whoosh. And after some time, I also was led to pray for the healing and release of the souls for those who had committed such atrocities. You know, I prayed not only for their release from the land, but also for, shall we say, the perpetrators to be healed from their own intergenerational trauma that had influenced them to mistreat and kill indigenous children. I felt this strong shift of energy in the land, and it was almost as if the land gave a huge sigh of relief. And the air was definitely lighter and more peaceful now. And driving back to Buffalo, where my hotel was, I had a hard time staying awake because of the huge shift in energy. Something had happened. And once I got back to the hotel, I slept for about 4 hours straight. And this was kind of like mid-afternoon. And I woke up, it was dark, and, you know, it's just, I had been out for a long time because I just needed that rest. I needed to take it easy for a while. And I also needed to drink plenty of water, you know, that liquid light to replenish the energy that has been released. And, you know, as I mentioned, you know, self-care is a must. And in working with energy and transforming it spiritually, we do need to take care of ourselves physically and emotionally and psychologically. Okay, so rest when you're tired, work when you have the energy, and always continue to integrate your experiences, because these also form your story for others to hear. Honor yourself and honor the ones, you know, with whom you pray for. And we are all beautiful souls made in that image of God, and we're filled with inherent value and dignity and worth. And yes, we may struggle to accept this truth because our attention is often diverted to focus solely on the externals, you know, on that outward appearance and behavior. And again, let's take this notion a little deeper. You know, truth be told, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness. There are just many things we don't realize yet, many things we don't see, but the potential is there. And it's just like looking for the butter and the cheese in every bowl of milk. Do we see the potential in ourselves to realize this? Do we see the potential in others to realize this? And this is what I mean by looking at others and ourselves as souls. It's like we may not be able to see this if we're looking at the externals, but look a little deeper. See what's there. See the potential. Okay? We may get glimpses of it, you know, but we never attain the full extent because, let's say, the physical or emotional or psychological issues cloud our vision of who we truly are. You know, because diseases and illnesses do afflict us in the body. You know, we do feel physical and emotional pain with so much intensity at times, we believe that we're going to break in two. And there are times when our lungs may struggle to take a breath, or hunger and diseases causes our stomachs and intestines and bowels and muscles and blood to scream in agony. And these experiences just might make us question whether or not we are the soul whom God has created. And yet, this illusion lies not in the suffering and the pain and the agony we experience, but rather it's in our own perception that there's nothing more to us than an emotional, intellectual, and physical body. And it's true. Physical and emotional pain and suffering can temporarily drown out the cry of the soul, but our soul is never silenced. And furthermore, this is the truth that is the greatest strength of who we are as our souls. And it lies in our ability to transform and transcend the physical, emotional, and even, you know, psychological limitations. Because for as much as history has shown us the horrific crimes that humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories of humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and to reclaim the soul. You know, a common expression that cuts across all generations and races and cultures is that we often reap what we sow. And many agricultural societies understand this concept better than others who have never put a seed in the ground. And if you have good soil and good seed, enough water, sun, and care, a healthy crop will be produced. And the Chinese actually have a saying that if a man plants melons, he will reap melons. If he sows beans, he'll reap beans. In other words, every action is going to produce an outcome or a consequence or a reward. And yet, there is another way to express this same idea in terms of character. It comes from an old Cherokee teaching. It says that one evening, an old Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside all of us. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. But the other one is good. It is joy and peace and love and hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." And the grandson thought about this for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" And the old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the one you feed." And certainly that which we feed, whether it's physically, emotionally, even spiritually, grows to produce more of the same. I mean, this concept is true whether we are referring to agriculture or our own human desires. And still, another way to understand this kind of reality of a cause and effect is through that symbol of the cornucopia, you know, that time-honored symbol of abundance long associated with Thanksgiving. And I remember reading one time from a Tiwa Native American ceremonial dancer, shaman, writer, and artist, Joseph Ra'el, or his name is Beautiful Painted Arrow. And he speaks about a vision that he had. He speaks about this horn of plenty that he had in 2006. And he writes about it in his book, Sound, Native Teachings and Visionary Art. And he tells this story. He says, "It was on April 16th, 2006, and I was doing a dance in Australia when the Horn of Plenty appeared above the dance grounds. The fruit of the Horn of Plenty began to fall into the dance arbor. It is spilling out into a spiral, which means it's germinating whatever is being seeded there. Abundance is coming to all of us who are living on earth at this time, and to our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And what the vision means is that there has been a major shift that has occurred. From the germination of the seeds will come the flowering of change. And we humans have fooled around long enough, and now God is going to take over. From now on, we are going to get plenty of everything we focus and act on. So, if we focus on conflict, we will get more conflict. However, if we focus on peace, we will get plenty of peace. As soon as we're focused on a goal, the universe will take us in that direction. It is important for future generations then that we elders leave this world, we leave it in a better place for our children and grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. You are here on Earth at this time because you're supposed to be here as their fathers, mothers, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. You will pass this peace on to future generations, and your responsibility will then become their responsibility. And folks, we live in a time when this is truer than ever before. The choice is ours. You know, who are we going to feed? What are we going to feed? If we feed inauthenticity, we're simply going to get more of the same. And if we feed genuineness, we're going to get more of the same of this. And once we understand this teaching, the blame game starts and stops with us. Are we going to be content to throw up our hands and fatalistically say, well, that's just the way the world is. We can't do anything about it. Or do we realize that one simple act of kindness, one simple act of love, one simple act of authenticity sends out ripples of transformation that will wash back ashore to us? We've been given tremendous power. Too much power at times, because without authenticity of the self, that power is dangerous, as history has taught us. And yet, on the other hand, with authenticity comes this correct use of power, because it's been tempered with wisdom and grace for the betterment of all. Reclaiming our authenticity means that we now have the capacity to change. We have the power to be that which has yet to be realized. Let me say this again. We now have the capacity to change. The power to be that which has yet to be realized. What are the gifts and graces that we have yet to realize in ourselves? What are the areas that are holding us back from seeing ourselves as soul? What are the pain and suffering that holds us back from seeing others as that soul? Quite often, we have to be able to see it in others before they see it in themselves, or let's say they believe it in themselves. And this is something that our children and grandchildren, even generations who have yet to be born, need to hear this message. They need to know that somebody loves them, that somebody believes in them, that somebody recognizes them for who they are. Not what they can and can't do, but who they are, filled with value, dignity, worth, grace, unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, so on and so forth. Because if we don't do it, who will? And when we experience the psycho-spiritual transformation, we also catch a glimpse of the beginning of something greater than ourselves with unlimited potential for life. And this is true, especially as we sit or as we lie down, as we dance, as we play, as we work. It's that transformative. It is that powerful. So what are we going to continue to feed? I mean, that vision was very clear. We are going to get more of the same. It all depends on what we focus on. So it's a tremendous promise that we have, that if we truly want to see changes in the world, it's going to have to start with us. That we just can't pass the buck on that one. We can't, no more excuses. We just cannot come up with these excuses anymore, because the excuses are just, they're done. They're done. I am Dr. James Houck, And I thank you for tuning in this hour and listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am so glad that you set aside this time to listen to the show. And again, I just encourage you to leave me your comments about today's show, these or, you know, other shows, and you might feel free to do so. Just visit that website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And between now and next week, may everybody be safe. May you find a way to bless somebody. And by all means, folks, let's behave ourselves. Okay? Take care and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Hauk, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.